Hi, I'm Gail from Europod. Before enjoying your podcast, allow me to say a few words about Europe Talks Back. In the third season of Europe Talks Back, I want to uncover the topics that matter, or should matter, to all of us. From gender to bodies and sex, digital to migration and urban landscapes, and everything in between. Rather than focusing on macro-level policies, let's zoom in and talk to the brave activists and volunteers with lived experience, who are working directly with marginalized communities to further equity, justice, and liberation for all.
Europod.
...97% of the water on our planet is salt water. Most of the remaining fresh water is frozen in ice caps and glaciers. What is accessible is merely a fraction of a fraction. Despite all of that, there is still enough fresh water on the planet for the 8 billion people. The problem is that it is unevenly distributed. Much of the water is either wasted, polluted, or unsustainably managed. By 2025, nearly 1.8 billion people will live in areas with absolute water scarcity. And nearly two-thirds of the global population could face water stress conditions. And that could create future conflicts.
According to our sister organization FAO, there has been already 2 billion inhabitants of our planet, one-fourth of our planet, where people have been exposed to major water stress, and there's a lack of drinking water and also lack of water for agriculture.
For years and generations, wars have been fought over oil. In a short matter of time, they will be fought over water. So when we think about building up our economy around our infrastructure on something like water policy, it's literally about jobs. It's about the fundamental source of life that Tammy Duckworth was talking about. It will sustain life. And it's about strengthening up our nation around a commodity that is a precious commodity.
In 2009, the former vice president of the World Bank stated that the wars of the 21st century will be about water. A couple of years later, the United Nations came up with the concept of water security. They defined it as
the capacity of a population to safeguard sustainable access to adequate quantities of acceptable quality water for sustaining livelihoods, human well-being, and socioeconomic development, for ensuring protection against waterborne pollution and water-related disasters, and for preserving ecosystems in a climate of peace and political stability.
History has shown that conflicts do not emerge out of thin air, nor are they inevitable. They result from a lack of access to basic services and life staples, such as food, water, and healthcare, or from gaps in security, laws, and governance systems. In the words of the UN Security Council, water, peace, and security are inextricably linked. Any gaps are potential flashpoints for violence and even conflict. Welcome back to the Water Series. I'm your host for today, Zeynep Kasmi, data analyst and global shaper. In this episode, we find out what the link is between water and conflict. The first recorded water war occurred more than 4,500 years ago in Mesopotamia. This ancient resource war is one of the earliest known organized battles in history. In 1187, in a fight against crusaders, Saladin strategically filled all the wells along the way with sand and destroyed the villages of the maritime Christians, who would supply the Christian army with water. In 1573, at the beginning of the 80 Years' War against Spain, the Dutch flooded the land to break the siege of the Spanish troops on the town of Alkmaar. The same defense was used to protect Leiden in 1574. This strategy became known as the Dutch waterline and was used frequently for defense purposes in later years. A deliberate disaster was seen in 1938, during the Second Sino-Japanese War. China ordered the destruction of the flood control dikes of the Yellow River. This deliberate disaster killed hundreds of thousands of people and displaced millions more across the river. The event sparked a major famine in 1942. From an early date, water was frequently used as a strategic instrument, and these are just a few examples.
Well, water was used as a weapon in conflict, and this is where we should be concerned. Historically, this happened, for example, in Iraq during the 90s when the previous regime dried up the marshes. And this is, of course, it drove people away from their lands who were hiding in this area. So this affected a whole community in the south of Iraq, affected their livelihoods, and it drove some kind of social conflict because they have to go to other places, to other cities. That is, they were also vulnerable and they were also affected by water scarcity.
I had the privilege to sit down with Maha Yassin, a researcher at the Planetary Security Initiative, which is a project run by a Dutch think tank, Klingendaal Institute. Her work focuses on raising awareness and catalyzing action on climate-related security risks. She's an expert on the MENA region, where water scarcity issues are one of the drivers of instability. To date, the Middle East is one of the severe water crisis zones. It has been said that future conflicts in the Middle East are more likely to be fought over water. Disputes over river basins have the potential to spiral out of control in an already volatile area. Primarily in question are the Euphrates, Tigris, and the Jordan rivers. For example, the Jordan River runs along Lebanon, Syria, Jordan, Israel, and Palestine. However, Israel has restricted Palestine's access to the river as a part of their ongoing occupation of the territory. Those who control water can use it to their political advantage. With water becoming more scarce, should we be concerned that it will be used as a weapon?
I think yes, we should be, because this trend is increasing. And as I mentioned earlier, like, water is valuable, you know, it's a valuable resource. And if someone can control it, then of course you can change the war to win it or to lose it. Recently, we saw this practice of weaponization of water happening in the Mosul area and in Syria when ISIS controlled the water resources over there. They used it to advance, to make military advances, and they also used it against their opponents, who were mostly the population in this area.
As Maha noted, the trend of using water as a weapon is increasing. In 2008, the International Criminal Court charged the former president of Sudan, Omar al-Bashir, with genocide, noting the connection between genocide and the deliberate destruction and poisoning of communal wells. In the view of the former prosecutor of the court, these actions could amount to genocide, provided that the intention is proven. The crime of genocide is dependent on the existence of an intent to destroy the targeted group. Such intent could exist and materialize in an isolated act of a single individual. In the dissenting opinion, Judge Osaka stated that the context of Darfur's harsh terrain, in which water and food sources are naturally scarce, must be taken into consideration. Judge Osaka found that the widespread destruction of water sources and the destruction of shelter demonstrated that the targeted group's means of survival were systematically destroyed. By taking into consideration the context, the destroying and poisoning the wells, these acts could amount to genocide.
Water is the lifeblood of Mother Earth. Whether it's frozen in the form of rain or clouds, in rivers, lakes, and oceans, water is around us and sustains us all.
The water crisis is a global crisis.
Concerns about water scarcity span different continents. This raises the chance of competition, conflict, and instability in communities, countries, and regions everywhere. Clashes between the farmers and herders in Horn of Africa. Disputes over large dam projects in Central Asia and the Nile River Basin. Violence in the Lake Chad region and state fragility in Iraq and Iran, driven at least in part by water issues. These examples show some of the many ways that conflict could arise from water-related challenges.
Water scarcity does stabilize a region and it does create conflict. Maybe we haven't an actual war happening because of water, but there are triggers, there are indicators that this could happen anytime, especially in MENA region because it's very water scarce and heavily affected by climate change. What we see now is tension most of the time. For example, between Egypt and Ethiopia, between Iraq, Turkey, and Iran. But these tensions could instigate regional conflict. And it's dangerous because this whole region is already unstable. Across the years, we saw a lot of conflict happening internally and externally, and climate change will only exacerbate these conflicts. It will also trigger migration. And the wave of migration that we saw in 2015, some researchers say it's also induced by climate change, water scarcity that happened in Syria. And there is an indicator that more of a migration wave of refugees coming to Europe or other countries where there is less impact of climate change. So this is like one of the, let's say, risks of climate change. So it's not only conflict, but also migration, which might not be necessarily a bad thing, but it could also create tensions eventually between countries. And this is what we saw during the refugees crisis.
From the sub-Saharan Africa to South Asia, water could trigger tensions or exacerbate conflicts. Right now, it is a potential flashpoint between Egypt and Ethiopia, both countries with a population over 100 million people are increasingly concerned about their water supplies. Ethiopia's construction of the Grand Ethiopian Renaissance Dam on the Nile is intended to double the country's electricity supply, but it is causing near panic in Egypt. These situations are regarded as water tensions. But there are also water conflicts, like those in the Middle East, Syria, and Iraq, which is a region already vulnerable to water scarcity.
Iraq shares water with Turkey and Iran, and there is already political tension between Iraq and these two countries. And we think that water could contribute to more conflict. So Iraq is the fifth most vulnerable country to climate change, and this is already putting its water resources under great strain. And it drives instability because, as I said, there is a regional issue, there is a water transboundary regional issue, and there is also internal water issue. And when water levels get low and low, it's not only scarce for people to use it, but it's also become polluted. And the pollution comes from two reasons. First, when water is scarce, the chemical and bacterial pollutants get concentrated because there is very poor water infrastructure. But also, we have the salinization issue. And this is when the water from the Persian Gulf travels upstream. So it also polluted the water. And then when that started to happen and increased recently, people lost their livelihoods. The farmers especially, who depends on livestock and on planting crops. And it's basically increased frustration among these communities. And then people started to protest. They wanted action from the government. And this is when the internal conflict started to happen, basically between the people who are frustrated and the government who failed to respond to this issue for so many years.
We've seen this repeatedly. Because of these internal conflicts over water, people lose their livelihoods. In a region where water is a scarce resource, water scarcity becomes a threat multiplier. In the context of the refugee and migration debate, especially here in Europe, a number of policymakers have identified natural resources, and namely water crises, as a key contributor to conflicts and instability, ultimately making people leave their country.
It reminded us once again that prevention must be at the heart of our collective goals of building and sustaining peace.
Preventing conflict requires closing development gaps, shrinking inequality, bringing hope to people around the world, rather than a catalyst for war. Could water be a catalyst for peace and cooperation?
I remember I had like a private talk with one of the managers, and she was from, I think, Jordan. And she said, like, yeah, there is, of course, like, there is a conflict, you know, like, there is a bigger problem that is happening between Palestinian and Israeli. And also we are the Jordanians. But let's just put these conflict or these disagreement aside. And let's just try to find a way to survive, you know, to live. And water is, of course, the most essential thing to survive. So let's just tackle this issue. And I find like this fascinating. Yeah, there is a deep disagreement between these three countries. But these NGOs, it tries to help people to live despite their like political, religious, ethnic background. You know, you need water for people to survive eventually.
Water plays many roles. It is a powerful tool during conflict. However, water should be seen as an opportunity. With a conflict mindset, you cannot see the other. There is danger involved. There is fear. There is animosity and prejudice. So, if there is an avenue to come in and restore dialogue, water is one of them.
If these countries are willing to get into a dialogue, if there is a political will to enter a dialogue on this shared resource, then of course there will be a cooperation. But let's not forget, there is also, these countries also have different economic situation. So if there is a cooperation, all these countries need to equally participate. And I don't think this is happening, and that's why we see water producing conflict and tensions.
Water is often at the heart of conflict, and with conflict, political will becomes the biggest barrier.
I don't think the political will is working in this case, and that's why you see NGOs are interfering and trying to do something about it. But I also do believe that NGOs cannot do enough. They are trying to do their best to solve issues, but still the scale of their work is limited. If we want to solve the issue regionally, then of course we need a higher political interference. You know, we need governments to get into like a dialogue. And then, yeah, we will see a solution.
The link between water and conflict is never direct and straightforward. Instead, it resembles a more of a meandering river with numerous arms than a straight canal. It is influenced if not determined, by several factors that will ultimately determine its direction, its extent, its timing, and its intensity. One thing is clear: water should not be seen as part of a conflict. In the Middle East, the effects of water scarcity are deeply felt. Back in Europe, we may experience sunnier days as the summers are a bit longer, temperatures are higher. But in the MENA region, water is already scarce. It affects conflicts and creates more tension. With water becoming more scarce, these tensions could multiply in the future. The fair allocation of water lies at the heart of creating peace and stability. If the water crisis continues, it will spread to other regions as well. The people who are affected will need a new home. In the next episode, we'll discuss how water crises can lead to forced migration.
Do you want to hear more podcasts that get to the bottom of things that stand out in the ambient noise? Join Europod. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and our newsletter. Follow us on LinkedIn, Twitter, and Instagram. Discover our brand new website at www.europod.eu and join us in our fight. Europod. Clear the noise. Start to listen.